we're going to get our unfair share of business.
That's what I'm talking
And we
about.
Know we're going to crush the people in the middle to the bottom of the market. So if you're not willing to figure out what it takes to be at the top of the market,
right,
it's not really a game worth playing because guys like us are doing it.
Right.
And,
right.
And we're going to, you're not going to compete with us flat out. I mean, just be honest. What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with Whiskey Wednesday with my main man, Jake Sheehy.
What's going on? How you feeling?
Good, buddy. I'm feeling good. How you feeling?
Man, it's a great day to be alive.
It's a great day to be alive. I always have my sign off, and that's your sign on.
That's
now,
how,
from now on. If you don't start the show like that, I'm going to worry a little bit now.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. But hey, we're feeling great. We got great stuff to talk about today. It's going to be an amazing episode, man.
Yeah, awesome, man. What do we have on the agenda today?
We're talking something motivational at first. We're just getting the day started, getting your blood pumping a little bit. We're going to go into some
Monday motivation. You're throwing it in there.
Monday motivation.
Even though it's Whiskey Wednesday.
A little mix here. Then we got some entertainment news, some really good stuff, some sports news, which I found very interesting, and what's your take on that? And then we have some STR questions to go through. But first and foremost, we're talking about motivation here, right? Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit on the premise of people wanting to start things, or they want to run down a path of entrepreneurship or whatever it may be, but then it dies off. Right, we see a huge spike New Year's and some seasons, but then it kind of dies down a little bit. And I'm curious on someone who's become successful, why do you think it dies off? Why do you think people don't follow through?
This could be a long episode if you let me go off on this one.
Okay.
The true answer is I don't know. I don't get it, but it happens all the time. Mm-hmm. Is we see people talk about wanting to do stuff. I mean, obviously we help people do things that they've, you know, never done before, and building portfolios, building a life that we'd say they don't want to take a vacation from. Mm-hmm. A lot of people come to us for advice, you know, tactical advice, blueprints, strategy, recipes for that. Yet I can't tell you how many times every single day of the week we talk to people who talk about it. They've been thinking about it for years. They want to do it. Mm-hmm. They're in a position to do it, and they do nothing. And I'm always interested in what keeps people from doing things versus sitting on the sidelines and just getting comfortable there. And I think that there's an epidemic in, you know, just human beings that we get comfortable sitting on the sidelines, especially semi-successful people, if you will. They get to a point, like it's, in my opinion, it's pretty easy to make a run for the, you know, and get better when your back's against the wall, when you're down and out. Mm-hmm. Like that position is really uncomfortable to be in.
Right.
And so naturally you're like, I'm taking some action. I'm done with this. Right. And we hear the rags to riches stories. We hear the rock bottom. Right. And then finally life woke me up and slapped me in the face and said, hey, listen, we're doing something different.
Mm-hmm.
What's always fascinating to me is the people that are actually, like, because those people usually are in a worse position than you're ever going to be in, and they're able to come out of it. But, you know, I think that's a little easier when your back's against the wall versus when things are going okay and things are comfortable and I don't have to do anything, but I talk about it all the time. And I think it's such a shame to sit and say, I want something better. Mm-hmm. I think I deserve something better. Right. I'm going to talk about doing something better, yet I do nothing. I take no action. I'm too big of a, you know.
I know, dude.
I better not say that. But you don't have the guts to go out and actually take a chance on yourself.
Right.
You don't bet on yourself. Uh-huh. And there's no excuse today in today's day and age because there's so many people that have come before you, and with the amount of information out there, the amount of help available, whatever you're trying to do, there is somebody that can help you accelerate your progress, and there's and really overcome whatever challenge you think you might have. And usually it comes down to three challenges that people give themselves, but their excuse is more than anything. They think they don't have enough time, they think they don't have enough money, or they don't think they have enough knowledge and expertise. And so time, money, knowledge, usually, or there's a version of that excuse that's holding somebody back,
right?
And at the end of the day, you can figure any of those three things out so easily. So it's like, you know, what a shame that you talk about doing something and just kind of give up on that dream, you know?
Well, I think you hit on two different styles here, in my opinion. Like, the back against the wall, that seems more like survival instinct. Like, almost any human, you're hungry, you're tired, you want something, it's survival.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Right.
But then you touched on the person that maybe has gone from survival and they made just enough. Just enough to stay comfortable, just to float, a flow state.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of dreams go to die.
For sure.
So then I'm curious, do you think it's because some people will never even start, not even get to the flow state, mm-hmm. right? So for those people, do you think it's more of like a, you know, in your mind, you may think like, oh, I can dream of something, of a life better. I can dream of it, daydream about it. But in my heart of hearts and in my heart, I don't believe that I have the abilities to do that. Is it a sense of like not believing in yourself enough, or making too many excuses that it's just too hard, that nobody, like, this is impossible?
It's a matter of where you're putting your focus on. I always say the difference between winners and losers is focus. That's it.
Right.
Am I going to focus on the opportunities, and I'm going to focus on how this dream, this dream that I have, or this life that I want, or am I going to focus on the things that could go wrong and the things that are holding me back and the challenges or the lack of resources that I may or may not have. Mm-hmm. And so it's a matter of focus. You have both sides of it. You have the positive side to focus on. You have the negative side to focus on. We all do. Every time we go down any road, we think about, you know, oh man, this would be awesome. But oh crap, what if this goes wrong? And winners spend more of their focus on the positive side.
Right.
And they try to eliminate the focus on the negative side. Mm. And I think so it's a matter of, we are so like accustomed to focusing on the negative. Turn on any news channel, scroll through your phone and everything else. Yeah. You know, the negative messaging inside of it, the fear side of things, we're so much more drawn to and attracted to, and it's just like this magnet, which ultimately holds you back, period. Right. And I think it's designed to do that. And, you know, it's one of my favorite books is called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill.
Right.
And the devil says, you know, the way I control the 98% of the population is from fear. And I focus on fear of poverty, fear of death, fear of all these different fears. Those are the two biggest ones that in the book, the devil says, this is how I control people. But they talk about, you know, having a definite purpose and going after something and focusing on the positive sides of life. Or the flip side, the devil wants us to be drifters. He says, I just want you drifting through life and just kind of going through the motions.
Right.
Worried about what's going to happen when I don't have money. Because guess what happens when you worry about not having money? You don't have money. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Our subconscious mind does not know the difference between when we are worried about no money, no money, no money, no money. Guess what we produce? Less money.
Yeah.
When we focus on abundance and everything else, and we say, hey, listen, and naturally your mind is going to figure out how to get you abundance.
Right.
The hard part about that is we are force-fed in any sort of media or messaging or anything else, the negative side of life.
Yeah.
We're just constantly being like all the messaging and everything we're seeing. So you have to very intentionally focus on the positive, the abundant, the dream that you had, right? Mm-hmm. And not give up on it and say, well, I'm not going to do it because of these other things. And you have to be aware that you start to focus on the negative side of things. And I'm a huge believer of that. I think that it's a sad, really sad scenario that the majority of people will just drift through life, and they will just, you know, they punch their clock through life every single day. It's like Groundhog Day. We're going to talk about a better life, but I don't give enough focus on it because I get drawn back to all the things that could go wrong, all the things I don't have, all the things, the resources that I wish I had before I started, and the time that I need to get back. And it's like, man, no, I mean, everybody has an equal amount of time. Everybody's resources or starting points are different. Everybody's knowledge base is different. And people have succeeded with a lot of resources. People have succeeded with zero resources. People have succeeded with knowing a lot of information, and they've succeeded with not knowing anything. And they've succeeded with being really busy or having all the time in the world. And the flip side of that is also true. People have failed with the exact same, a lot of resources, little resources, a lot of time, a lot of knowledge, little knowledge. Right. Yeah. And so, at the end of the day, we just get really good at justifying mm-hmm. our reasons for not moving forward, right?
Oh, because yeah.
you don't want to look in the mirror and say, man, you know, are you a winner or are you a loser? Oh, by the way, you're acting like a loser right now because you're focusing all the negative things. You're telling me all the reasons why you can't do this, and you're believing it. And is that really what we want to do? And looking in the mirror is a hard thing to do because that person staring back at you actually knows the truth. And as much as you want to justify it, in the back of your mind, you know the truth of the matter is you're too scared to actually go out and fail. You're too scared to go take a, you know, take a chance on your own self. You're too afraid to bet on yourself and start running down that road. And it's a really sad scenario because in the business we're in, where we do help people run down those roads and we have a lot of conversations, it's shocking to me how many few people are willing to take action toward their dreams and their goals and how many people are okay justifying sitting on the sidelines.
Mm. Okay, I have a question for you and then I want to share the statistic with you because I want your reaction to it. My question is, do you think, genuine question here, do you think that, you know, I don't know really how it was with your generation, but I feel like in mine, a lot of it was as a young kid being told, like, you have a voice, like, you're special, like, be a leader. Like, that was always kind of like a thing of, like, lead people and create things and, like, this reach for the stars, pull your bootstraps mentality, right? Like, you can do amazing things. But I think on the flip side of that coin, there's also people who don't have that, who are people that are okay with going home, sitting on the couch, opening up a Coke, turning on e-news, and just flowing.
Yeah.
And there's this this part of you where it's like, oh man, you were told like I can create great things, but at the end of it, that's not me. And it's okay if that's not you, but you need to like find out if you're that person, because not everyone can be the top. Not everyone can be the first round draft pick. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It takes a certain kind of criteria. Do you ever think that there's too many people that were told, like, you can do this, that just genuinely, you're not built for it?
No, I okay. do not. No.
What's your take on this?
Yeah, I completely disagree with this. One, okay. I really wish more people were told that. I wish as kids, we all believe that. We were all told that, right? When we come out of the womb, we have no limitations. We don't worry about if things aren't going to work out, we're willing to try anything. We're willing to do anything. And along the way, our parents, our, you know, schools, our churches, along the way, society starts telling you, you can't do that. You got to fit within this box. Oh no, that's not allowed here. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, by the way, you know, that's not for you. You're just you're not that person that can go run down that road. You know, that's for other people. Right. And those are the messages that we start to hear as we grow up. And all of a sudden we become this kid, and usually somewhere around that, you know, you start to get into kindergarten, you start to go to schools, and you start to fit into these boxes that they want us to fit into. All of a sudden we're told led to believe that there are those limitations and there are those things that we're not supposed to do or that we are supposed to do. And that doesn't always align with the biggest and best life that we want to live. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I wish that we were told all that everybody was told, you can do anything you want to do.
Right.
You can, as long, you know, and there's a thing where the woo meets the work. I heard one, a lady say one time, she said, you know, you can have all the positive energy and thoughts and everything, the woo fluffy side of life, right?
But then
you got to take the action. Then you got to put in the work. Then you got to roll up your sleeves. And both of them have to go together. But we're willing to put in that action and take the time and the effort if we actually believe that, you know, that we were supposed to do that. As a kid, what if you told the kid, you're never going to be able to walk? They're like, you know, and they don't even understand when they're learning to walk what that means. They want to get up and they want to move and they want to stand up, and they're going to fall down and they're going to stand up and they're going to fall down and they're going to figure it out. They're going to bump their head, whatever they're doing. And somewhere along the way, we start to get message after message after message that we have to fit in this box and we can't do this and we're not meant for that. And we better follow these rules and this is what we should be doing. Right. And ultimately, we start to be okay with it. We are to start to say, okay, I'm okay. I'm okay running down this life that and being a pawn in somebody else's system. And I think it's a shame.
Ooh, that's just getting complacent. I love it. Okay, my turn for the statistic. I found this over the weekend. Okay. So talking about motivation, this is amazing to me. All right, so the average American has now become fatter than the average American pig. The average American pig has around 16% body fat. The average man has around 28%, and the average woman 40%.
That's pathetic.
So the average American human is fatter than the American pig. Dude, is that not like, if we're going to talk about motivation, talking about getting up, building the life you don't want to take vacation from, that's just crazy. That's a crazy statistic.
Is
that not?
It's disgusting, really. I mean, crazy. This isn't like trying to be like rude.
No, I'm not fat shaming you, but I'm just saying, like,
it's like we went through a period of time where they were celebrating that this is healthy. You would open like the Cosmo magazine and mm-hmm. some of these magazines, and they'd have these overweight women who are obese
uh-huh.
and saying this is healthy. This isn't healthy.
No,
like, be realistic about what's healthy and what's not
right.
healthy.
Right.
And we have become a society that we start to again justify
mm-hmm.
all of these, in my opinion, ridiculous, you know, rules, and the this is actually a healthy way to live.
I know, dude, it's crazy.
I mean, I saw a thing that I saw a similar statistic, and somebody was talking about the percentage of prediabetes in kids under 12. It's staggering. It's like 1 in 4 kids have prediabetes.
I think I saw that statistic.
Yeah. Under the age of 12. I mean, yeah. really? That's when you're out running around doing stuff. The problem is nobody's doing that anymore.
I know. And oh, dude.
I saw this little fat kid on a scooter the other day, and he's riding his scooter. He's outside, and he's got this big old pop, like this 64-ounce like
soda
sucking like it down while gulp. He's on his thing. And I'm like, the kid's obese. And he's probably 10 years old. I'm like, how do you become obese when you're 10 years old? And then we act like it's okay.
I know.
It's not okay.
It's not.
In my opinion.
Yeah.
It's a shame that, again, we're telling people that that is an okay way to live or a healthy way to live.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has their own choices. They can be them. You be you, I'll be me, right? Yeah. Do your thing. But that is, you're not setting yourself up for a recipe for success mm-mm. and longevity and feeling good and energy levels and everything else. And yet we justify it. We sit and say, it's okay. Hey, Sean, don't be rude. Don't be, you know, don't call this stuff out and say that it's wrong.
Rude, man.
I don't either.
I don't know how it's rude, because especially if we're going to talk about like building a life you don't want a vacation from and like taking those motivational steps, when you work out, you feel better about yourself. You're doing these micro, what are they called? You're achieving something on a daily basis.
Right.
Right. And that's good, especially if you find yourself to be like a quitter, or you get complacent at times, or you're not following through. Man, this is something that you can do daily that's going to help rewire your brain.
100%.
This is,
that's what it is. It's rewiring your brain to say, I'm actually able to keep a commitment to myself.
Yeah.
If I mm-hmm. say I'm going to work out for 30 minutes a day, or I'm going to go on a walk every single mm-hmm. day, whatever it is, do something small. You don't have to go be Mr. Olympian or Mrs. Olympian, or just go do something and start to keep that commitment to yourself. Build the habit of starting to build a better life in multiple areas of your life, right? There's mm-hmm. there's those four core areas of health, finances, relationships, and faith, you know, and saying, hey, listen, what are you doing every day to try to build and get better in those things? It doesn't mean on the fitness side, you got to run a marathon every day.
Right.
It doesn't mean that you got to go build a massive empire on your business side, but why not do something today that is building you toward a better future instead of doing whatever you want, drifting through life. Like the book in the devil would say, I control 98% of the population, because most people, one, I make them scared to death, and then I help them justify the drifting and take their focus off a definite purpose. They don't have a definite purpose. They're just drifting through life, and they're super easy to control, is what the devil's saying in the book. I love the book. Napoleon Hill has a conversation with the devil, and he has these questions for him, and he can't. The devil has to tell him the truth. And it's very, very interesting to me, and I think there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah, being adrift, just find a purpose and run down it, man. That's
right.
Okay, well, I kind of want to skip. We're already about 18 minutes in. I kind of want to skip the entertainment.
Okay.
It was kind of a debate on AI and stuff, so we can skip over that. I want to touch on this because I just find it – this is just so mind-boggling, and I want to know what you would do with this. For sports news, we have 17-year-old – okay, so let me read to say that. 17-year-old Eli Willits, he's the first round pick in the amateur MLB draft. He got a signing bonus of $8.2 million. What? Okay. So say you're 17-year-old Eli Willits, right? What are some things? What do you do with the 8.2? Do you scroll it away? Maybe give it to some financial advisor? Do you start buying mom and dad and brothers and sisters houses? What do you do with $8.2 million? Yeah.
Well, you know what I'm doing. I'm buying houses.
At 17.
I mean, the smartest thing for those kids, if you've never had that kind of money, you don't know
dude, what 8.2
right, you don't know what to do with it. My point right. is like it, the mm-hmm. minute you it's like why lottery, you know, you haven't built the skill set to mm-hmm. make $8.2 million outside of your baseball skill set. I'm saying right. you don't have the skill set of earning the money through a business or something else, and which means you don't know how to manage $8.2 million or what to do with it. And so for sure you hire a team, right? You go do some due diligence, you get some financial advisors.
Yeah.
And you decide where to allocate those funds, you know, and try to say, hey, listen, especially in sports, you know,
it, goes it doesn't last,
right? Yeah. There's this key element of the best sports athletes in the world, which is they have to be youth. They're youthful, right? They're young. And you know, for a lot of athletes, by the time you hit your 30s, you're washed up, you're done. And so it's going to go by in the blink of an eye. Yeah. And so you want to really say, hey, listen, I'm going to make this money right now. I'm going to hire a team. I'm going to make sure that I start to build the habits and the skill set of what it's going to take to manage this type of money, but also lean on my team in the very beginning because I don't know how to manage it.
Yeah.
You don't go hire your friends and your posse and your, you know, and all your best buddies which is why most athletes go broke because that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am going to hire a team and they get this entourage who's all on payroll.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're like, I don't know where all my money went. And you look back and you're like, bro.
No, everyone's got Rolexes on, bro. Yeah, what are you talking about?
Exactly. Yeah. your whole entourage and we're flying private and we're doing all this stuff. Now, the thing is you invest $8.2 million and you know, even getting, if you can get a 10% return on that every single year, fairly conservatively, and you're getting 10% return, it's pretty nice. You're almost making $1 million a year. And so, you know, over the course of his career, he's going to make more than that.
Right.
And so if you go from, you know, I don't know what his background is, right? But let's just say it's an average background, and you're comfortable, but you're not making $1 million a year.
Right.
If you can invest that first initial chunk and really just set yourself up for $1 million a year passively,
like
that's what I would be doing is saying, okay, I have a job now, or I have something that pays me $1 million a year passively.
That's the way to go.
Preferably assets that are going up in value. So 10 years from now, your $8.2 million portfolio is not only spitting you off some money, but it's also grown to 15 or 20 million, right?
Okay.
And so that's, I mean, I obviously love real estate.
Right.
I would love to see, you know, most of these kids invest in real estate. I think it's a great investment, but there's obviously many roads to run down.
Right.
And you hire the team and you do some due diligence on that team and it's not going to be your cousin or your entourage or your best friend
who wants
to be a financial planner.
Right.
Find somebody who actually
got some experience in this
and is used to
this kind of money.
This type of money.
Yeah. That reminded me of your conversation with Bridget Brick, episode 244, playing the chess game of money. She talks about that a little bit. So I'm going to throw that out there. What would you buy? Come on. Real fast, last thing. What would you buy? You had $8.2 million landed in your lap. You're 17. Come on. A fun purchase. Come on.
Oh.
You don't have like a car. Ranch.
No, I'd be buying me a...
Really? You don't have like a car... Nothing.
No, I drive an F-350 King Ranch Super Duty, and I will drive that right till the day I die.
Okay.
I love that truck. Yeah. I'm a truck guy, so I don't. Right. I'm not a car guy. I just like to have my trucks.
No plane, no helicopter, nothing.
I would be
nothing. Dude.
So I only had the 8.2, no, I'm probably not buying. I'm probably not going out and buying planes right out of the gate. I'll charter them.
Maybe
I'll get me an investment.
Yeah, try it out.
$1 million a year, and I'll start chartering here and there. But you know. If I was going to buy a really purchase,
here we go.
It would be like a vintage truck. Like I would be give me a really decked out like 1978 Ford, Highboy or something.
I like how that came to your head right there. Okay, that was good. Yeah. That's a good one. All right, moving into some STR stuff. I want to start out with. I mean, it was really helpful reading this. It was an AirDNA article about June, the U.S. Market Review. And just heads up for people, you're interviewing the CEO of AirDNA in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
so that's going to be
great.
A huge one. Yeah. When we go to this article, some things really stick out to me, so I'm going to read some of this. Here's with occupancy stabilizing and average daily rates ADR rising 6.8 year over year, STR investments are starting to look more attractive today than at any point in the past year. More travelers are staying in short-term rentals in the U.S. with demand increasing 3.1 year over year in June. Okay, so, I mean, and it kind of goes into more and more details about this kind of stuff, but I just wanted to start with the STR questions as it's looking better and better. Like, it's not going down.
No.
Every time people tune into this, if you're crossing your fingers thinking maybe short-term rentals aren't it, it keeps going up.
I know.
It keeps, like, we're yelling it from the rooftops.
Because it's not a surprise anymore.
No.
You know, there was a few years post-pandemic that I was like, man, mm-hmm. the demand, I expected the demand to continue, like drop a little bit, and mm-hmm. it never did. Right. The demand continues to go up. This article just showed that.
Yeah.
Demand is up year over year again. Occupancy was pretty stable. It dropped a tad from 64% to 63%, but it's still above the pre-pandemic levels.
Come on, man.
I mean, it's and demand is way above. The mm-hmm. And demand is the total dollars being spent, right? And, I mean, it's a mainstream asset class, and it's a very preferred asset class at this stage in the game, and it's just not going anywhere. So trying to make the argument that this bubble is gone and it's bursting, or the golden age of short-term rentals is over and all those different things, that argument's a tough one to make when you look at the numbers.
Yeah, you're not looking at the data if you're saying that.
Exactly. Just go look at the data. Right. And so, I obviously we're in this business. I see all the articles out there mm-hmm. saying how bad it is and how people are struggling and everything else, mm-hmm. which – The truth side of that coin is not every property makes money. We're looking at overall demand from the consumer. We're looking at overall occupancy from the consumer and saying, hey, listen, consumer likes this asset class. Mm-hmm. They like to spend money on short-term rentals. It's an economical way to travel. Mm-hmm. And so everybody thinks, oh, hospitality is going to be affected by any sort of recession or anything else. Well, first of all, mm-hmm. the American consumer is extremely resilient. We've seen that over the last couple of years.
Right.
And specifically in the hospitality space, short-term rentals have become the shining star, because not only are you able to buy or get rent really nice properties in really nice areas, really anywhere now. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're pretty much everywhere. But you share them with somebody. You have full kitchens. You don't have to go out to eat all the time. So it's an economical way to travel as well.
Right.
And the true side of the coin of saying short-term rental investors are struggling is mm-hmm. that the money is made by people like us. We right. make the money at the top of the market mm-hmm. and we get our unfair share of business. There is not, this demand that you're looking at on those AirDNA numbers mm-hmm. when they do the market numbers, mm-hmm. that demand is not spread out equally. Everybody doesn't get their fair share of a piece mm-hmm. of a pie. That's right. What, when you look at RevPAR, that's what you get. Well, we don't ever look at RevPAR when we underwrite mm-hmm. and we don't even pay attention to it, because that's your fair share of business. We know we're going to get our unfair share of business.
That's what I'm talking about.
And we
about.
Know we're going to crush the people in the middle to the bottom of the market. So if you're not willing to figure out what it takes to be at the top of the market,
right.
it's not really a game worth playing, because guys like us are doing it.
Right. Right.
And you're not going to compete with us flat out. I mean, just be honest. And and we're not the only group in there. I'm saying when I say like us, anybody that's willing to do what it takes to be at the top of the market is going to gain probably 80 to 90% of the dollars being spent by the consumer.
Nice, dude.
And it's a very uneven distribution of those dollars.
Yeah.
If you will.
Yeah.
And so the exciting part is that's pretty fun when you're operating at the top and the consumer is willing to spend the money at the top, and the average investor is not willing to do what it takes to operate at the top. So, it can be, it's a lot less crowded than the middle and the bottom of the market.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, this is kind of a off-the-top question for you, off the top of your head. You ready? Kind of fast. In the month of June, there has been an uptick in the interest to travel to the USA, and that was a survey that just came out. Say you were creating an STR just for overseas travelers. Where would you buy that STR at?
Yeah, I'm going to the major national parks, any of the major,
Okay, time out. That's a great answer, because in my mind, I immediately go to the major cities.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But that's a great answer, because if I'm traveling, if I'm going to France, I don't really care for Paris. I know it's trashy. I want to see something else, right?
Yeah, but think about our iconic cities in the U.S. But while they can be fun,
uh-huh.
when we go from the U.S., we like some of those iconic cities in mm-hmm. Europe because of the history behind them.
Right.
I mean, our cities are at most a couple hundred years old.
Dude, that's such
a
good
point. They go over there and they're like, you know, this is just a kind of an update in
architecture and stuff.
Yeah, so we
Dude, you're so right.
We're interested in that going over there. It, when international travelers come over here, they want to see the geography. Like, so for me, I mean, they're coming everywhere, right? They like the major iconic cities. But if I'm buying and investing and going to target international travelers, one, like the Orlando markets, like the Disney stuff, they like that. So if you have a major attraction, something like that, but I'm going to lean toward the national parks because the national parks get a lot of international travelers, and some of the major national parks or the major, you know, like the Grand Canyon type of area there. I mean, you go look you go look at where they're coming from, and a lot, you get a lot of international travelers around those major national parks. And the reason I would do that is because I'm also hedging my bet and double dipping, because guess who else travels to all the national parks all the time?
U.S. people.
Domestic travelers.
Yeah.
And their drive to destinations. Mm-hmm. And so you're double dipping, and you, you're very attractive to international travelers as well as domestic
travelers. Man, that's a fantastic answer, Sean. Thank you. That was a good one. All right. Okay, now into some other stuff here. I had these questions coming up. Okay, so say, you know, Mike Whitfield Wind Development does amazing with the design, and so does Ann Sinsack, right? They do amazing job. But say someone, they can't afford the giant art pieces on the wall, or like the really extravagant things, and they have to go maybe a tier down.
Yeah,
right. Would you recommend that someone maybe does murals on the wall or wallpaper, or what do you advise someone to do if they can't reach the top tier?
Well, usually the cost difference is actually not that different,
really?
To be honest. Like, if you're saying, okay, I'm going to do all the customized artwork or whatever else, or I'm going to choose murals or wallpaper, the cost difference is not
that significant.
No. In fact, it's probably going to be very, very similar.
Okay.
And so the real question is, if you can't afford to get a property – to dial in a really unique experience and be able to articulate it really well, what do you do? And the answer to that is maybe sell or get out of the game.
Right.
Because like I was just talking about before, it's just a very, very difficult game to play in the middle of the market. And we see so many investors right now trying to do that, and they struggle.
Right.
Because if they're not willing to invest what it takes to operate toward the top of the market. Yeah. And that starts with some of that design. And it can be executed in multiple ways, right? What we're really trying to do, and all three of those ways that you mentioned are ways to execute certain experiences and certain spaces and being able to kind of transform some of these spaces. The cost difference isn't that much.
Right.
The reason I like the customized artwork and stuff is because fewer people do it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And so the murals, the cool wallpapers and everything else, while they have beautiful design and they can kind of transform a space, they also, they're that, you know, from that middle of the market model home, that's kind of the next tier up of where people start to compete. Now there's fewer people doing it,
right.
But there's also, you're going to have competitors with designers that all kind of use that. With our customized signature art pieces that we put in there, there's nobody's doing that really.
Yeah.
And so
consumers
like different.
Yeah.
And they like to be able to say, hey, listen, I don't want, if they see the same or multiple options that are similar,
right,
what they go back to is price, and they start to say, okay, who's got the better price?
Yeah.
If I see something different, and it's now it's not apples to apples, it's apples to oranges, I might be willing to pay more for an orange than an apple, right? And that's where you have to really think about it. So you're not necessarily saving any of those ways, but there's one of them, in my opinion, that gives you a better bang for your buck. And it helps you stand out and be different because fewer people are doing it. And that's the customized art pieces that we're really transforming. Now, if you've got a property that you're not willing to do that in, you either have to be okay with just supplementing some income and maybe not making some money with your property, and or as far as cash flow, you're supplementing some of your cash flow by hopefully keeping a long-term asset that might be a great asset, might be a good property in a good area. It's just not going to produce from a cash flow revenue side the way that you want it to without investing in some of those other things. But it could still be a good tax haven for you. It could be a good property for appreciation, pay down, everything else. It's probably just supplementing itself, and you have to be okay with that. You have to look in the mirror and say, that's the reality of how I set this property up is to perform here in the middle of the market. And I know that I'm going to become a commodity because that's what everybody else has, is really nice properties in nice areas. And I'm going to start competing on price.
Right.
And so I always tell people, look at what you're leaving on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And many times, let's say I just looked at one this morning. This person's, they're going to leave like their market potential by dialing all this stuff in. It's a condo in Mammoth, California. And it's not a huge condo, mm-hmm. but they're going to have about a $30,000 investment to mm-hmm. do, kind of give it a facelift. Not new. They're not doing new furniture or anything. They have really good furniture. It looks like a model home. We're just right. going to come in and give this thing a facelift.
Yeah.
But they're leaving about $55,000 a year on the table.
Dude,
in revenue. And so it's like, okay, why wouldn't I invest 30 to make back another 50 a year?
Mm-hmm.
And so I've got less than 1 year payback on my money. I'm like 8 months in, I've got all my money back. Mm-hmm. And then you're going to ride this for 5 or 7 years. That's a heck of a return on that investment.
Yeah.
And one, you have to know the numbers. Two, you have to be willing to trust the numbers and actually go execute that. And most people aren't. We were just talking about in the very beginning.
Yeah.
A lot of people talk about it. Nobody does it. And which is why, you know, the Whitfields and the Anns and the Bryans and the Katies of the world, all of our expert advisors are like, Sean, how long do you think we've got as far as this runway? Just crushing it at the top of these markets. And I tell them, guys, I think we got a longer time than you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're worried that everybody's just going to start to copy, reverse engineer, which I encourage people to. Let's raise the bar in the entire industry. I'm like, we share on this show, we share properties all the time and say, guys, go reverse engineer it. Success leaves clues. Go do it.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is, I know people don't.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so... you feel good about yourself because you're trying to show them exactly what it takes to do the right to operate and get their unfair share of business.
Right.
But you also, the reality of the matter is most people aren't going to do it.
Okay, so now we can cut this question if you don't like this question. Okay. But this is a question I genuinely came up with this weekend and I wanted to put it in the show. If you don't like it, I'll cut it. But anyway, here's my question. Okay, so I'm going to build you a scenario here. Say I'm a multimillionaire, right? I came across Vodacy Vacation Rental Revolution. I'm listening to the podcast and I'm going, you know, I'm a multimillionaire. I have the money. I would like to bonus depreciate. I would like to have a growing asset, right? So I'll do the STR. I'll bonus depreciate. I'll put as much money as Sean and every expert tells me to do, and I'll do all the things, and it'll be great. But I want to have it, and then in a couple of years, whenever my kids get older, I'm going to sell it and give it to them or let them live in it for college, whatever they may be. But they go, I'm a CEO. I'm very busy. I'm a lawyer. I'm whatever. I'm super busy. I don't really have time to go through the curriculum. I don't really have time to like meeting with these expert advisors. I don't really have the time for all this stuff. Who should those people put in charge? Should those people even come into this at all if you're not even going to put the time and effort into it? Or should you go, okay, that makes sense. You're super busy or whatever. Maybe let the kids learn this. Let the kids learn this. Maybe let the wife or maybe let your assistant take the reins here. How would you advise that?
That's where I'd start.
Okay.
If I was in that, when we talk to those types of business, they're typically business owners all the time. And they're busy professionals, high W-2 income earners, you know, business owners, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Sean, I just want to pay you to do it.
Right.
We don't do that. And the reason I don't do that, there's other people that will do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that it's as responsible. I don't do it because I don't let somebody else decide what I'm doing with my money. And I don't want to take somebody else's money and say on something I wouldn't do myself. Right.
Right. That makes complete
sense.
And
so that's why I don't do it. People ask me all the time, they're like, Sean, you can make a lot more money just doing it done for you.
Yeah.
And take these guys' money, go, you know, you're going to give them a good asset. I don't do that with my own money. And so I'm not going to take it from somebody else to do it. But what I would suggest is you probably, like you said, if you're going to get your kids involved in that scenario that you just gave, I'd get my kids involved in.
Right.
This isn't rocket science. My 14-year-olds have gone through the course and they know how to underwrite deals.
Yes.
They show me properties. And so it's not necessarily that somebody can't on your team that has your best interest at heart, that you trust, that you feel comfortable with in that position.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it is. An assistant or somebody on your team that does it, but maybe it is just a family member. Maybe it's your wife, your kids who want to be, you know, they want to have something else that they're going to be a part of that you're maybe funding, and you're still a part of it, but you're not really pulling all the levers. They're getting in and doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an interesting game that is always going to be, in my opinion, a mom and pop business instead of like an institutional investor type business, even though it's a large dollar amounts, even though it's an asset class that's mainstream now.
Mm-hmm.
But there are nuances to these properties, and they're very unique properties, which they're not as scalable as like big institutional investors would like to see them, which is also why I think you have to have, you know, some personal involvement in it and understand what's going on, because every little, even though you have a blueprint and a recipe you're following, you know, there's rules and things that we follow all the time, but then you go apply them to a certain property without intimate knowledge of that property throughout the course of ownership. And, you know, because you're going to make some iterations and changes in pricing and your guest avatars, maybe some things you're doing.
Right.
And it's hard to just, it's hard to have somebody say, hey, listen, I'm going to give you a chunk of money. You give me back a property. I give you back a property. And I have this huge vision for it. You don't know what my vision is. And so unless you're hiring me to keep managing it the whole time and execute our entire vision, it's going to fall flat. And then all of a sudden you have this asset that you're like, I don't know what I just got into.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why I don't do that on the turnkey.
That makes complete sense. That makes complete sense. Well, hey, that was all I had. We're at 40 minutes. So this we did great today, man.
That was a good episode.
Yeah, I thought we did some really good stuff today.
That was good.
Huh? What a great day to be alive, man.
What a great day to be alive. I like it, Jake. All right, guys, we'll wrap it up. We know how valuable your time is. Appreciate you spending over 40 minutes with us. That's a pretty long little episode for us. Mm-hmm. Usually we try to wrap them about 30. So extra 10 minutes for you. It's that bonus exercise, right? That bonus question that Jake threw in there. I'm not going to have him cut it out. Don't worry, you guys. You heard him say he's going to cut it. We'll leave it all in there. We don't cut anything out.
Yeah, we don't cut.
No, we let you hear the whole conversation. So, guys, we're going to wrap it up. If you know somebody that would like to be a part of these conversations, share the show. Those things help us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today to start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends. Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey, Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.